Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 297, titled Going to the Dogs. This is being recorded on April 29th of the year 2001. This program is going to cover a very disturbing death in San Francisco. A woman named Diane Whipple, who was a lacrosse coach at a local college, was mauled to death by a large dog apparently being bred for, if not attack dog, purposes for guard dog purposes, for mean a blank blank dog purposes. And upon investigation of the circumstances surrounding this woman's death, the San Francisco legal authorities have charged the lawyer couple that were the owners and keepers of these dogs with second degree murder. Whatever the outcome of that case turns out to be, the investigation into the case revealed that there was a whole lot more going on here than animal husbandry, so to speak, and there's a nasty little pun there, the context of which will become clear, perhaps, during the course of the program. We're going to begin investigating this case, which made national headlines, but a lot of the aspects of it have not made the national press. We're going to begin investigating this case by taking a look at an article from the San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, January 30th of the year 2001. One of the aspects of the case that turned out to be very strange indeed was that the couple, Robert Knoll and Marjorie Knoller, last name capital N-O-E-L and capital K-N-O-L-L-E-R, who were the keepers of these two Presa Canario dogs named Bane and Hera, they were the lawyers for a couple of inmates in Pelican Bay, a maximum security prison in California. Those inmates were also members of the Aryan Brotherhood, a very powerful white supremacist prison gang with strong links to what, for lack of a better term, might be called street culture outside of the prison, and a group of people whose influence is not to be underestimated. The Chronicle of 130-2001 discussed this couple's association with a couple of members of the Aryan Brotherhood, who in turn were breeding these dogs while in the prison, were apparently running a dog breeding racket, so to speak, while in prison. This article is by Jackson Van Derbeken, capital V-A-N, capital D-E-R-B-E-K-E-N. The article is headlined, Prison Gang Duo Linked to Dog That Killed Woman, and the article reads in part as follows. The dog that killed a San Francisco woman had a long history of viciousness and was secretly owned by two Aryan Brotherhood prison gang members as part of an underground scheme to breed and sell animals while in maximum security at Pelican Bay, officials said. At the time of Friday's fatal attack on Diane Whipple, the 120-pound Presa Canario dog Bane was being kept by the inmates' attorneys Robert Knoll and Marjorie Knoller of Pacific Heights, as was another dog, Hera, skipping down. Authorities said Pelican Bay inmates Paul Cornfed Schneider and Dale Breches were investigated by state prison authorities last year and found guilty in February of running a dog breeding scheme while in the maximum security housing unit at the prison. Stranger still was the fact that the couple had adopted Paul Cornfed Schneider as their son, and this is just one of a number of very strange aspects of the case. That was covered in the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, February 1st of the year 2001. This is an article by Harriet Chang, C-H-I-A-N-G. It's headlined, Lawyer's Adoption of Inmate Stuns Legal Expert. Legal Experts. And the article reads in part as follows. News that the lawyers whose dog mauled a San Francisco woman to death have adopted the animal's prior owner, a prison inmate and a member of the Aryan Brotherhood, has veteran family attorneys shaking their heads in disbelief. Shaking their heads in disbelief. This had nothing to do with any of the attorneys for any of the families involved here. Continuing. Adult adoptions are not unusual, but when Robert Knoll, 59, and Marjorie Knoller, 45, became the parents of 38-year-old Paul John Cornfed Schneider, now serving time in Pelican Bay for aggravated assault and attempted murder, it turned a tragic situation into a bizarre one. Adoption lawyers and scholars say they have never heard of a lawyer adopting an adult client, a situation that raises a spectrum of ethical issues. I don't know what's going on in this dog case, said Norden Blacker, a prominent San Francisco family lawyer. This seems particularly strange. unquote. Well, it gets a whole lot stranger as the case turned out to be investigated. Although some of the aspects of it have yet to be proved, it gets really strange indeed. The two lawyers, again, who were keeping these dogs with the dog's owners, were apparently keeping them on behalf of a couple of Aryan Brotherhood members who were breeding the dogs as part of a scheme to apparently generate profits. And it turns out that they had adopted one of the inmates as their son. That is to say, the couple had. Their behavior after being indicted was also rather strange. This is an article from the San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, March 28th of the year 2001. This article is also by Jackson von Derbeken. The article is headlined, Murder and Manslaughter Charges in Dog Attack. And again, it's by Jackson von Derbeken, the author of the first article that we read. Skipping down in the article, after being indicted in the case, the lawyers behaved sort of strangely. As the grand jury deliberated, Noel and Noller headed north on Interstate 80 in a maroon Chevrolet Impala. Undercover San Francisco police and unmarked cars followed close behind, but Hallinan, that's San Francisco DA Terrence Hallinan, would not say why authorities ordered the surveillance. A California Highway Patrol officer stopped Noel in Woodland at 4:29 p.m. after he reportedly made several unsafe lane changes while driving through southern Yolo County at speeds reportedly topping 90 miles per hour. Mr. Noel was very cordial and didn't seem too upset by the incident, said CHP Sergeant Willie Brooks. Noel was issued a ticket for reckless driving. Before heading off, Noel told the San Francisco officers where he was headed, said Lieutenant Henry Hunter. The couple arrived at a ranch owned by their friend and client James Patton in Corning, a small Tehama County town about 170 miles north of San Francisco, shortly after 6 p.m. Skipping down, 3 days after the attack, a judge finalized the couple's adoption of Paul Cornfed Schneider, a 38-year-old convict serving a life sentence at Pelican Bay State Prison. So note that after, while the grand jury was deliberating, the couple then took off for a small town in Northern California owned by their friend and client, James Patton. They were driving about 90 miles an hour, according to this account, and affected several unsafe lane changes, and it would indicate some serious stress. This case gets really strange indeed. Skipping down in this article, what's more, prison officials said Hallinan's investigators found nude photos of Noller in Schneider's cell while searching for evidence. So the allegation here is that some of the DA's investigators found nude photos of Noller in Schneider's cell while searching for evidence. If true, this is very strange indeed. Bear in mind that Schneider was her adopted son. So this, again, is a lot of real strange stuff. It gets stranger than this here. Again, this article is from the Chronicle of Wednesday, March 28th of the year 2001. Let me stress, too, that this broadcast, like so many that I do, is interrogatory in nature. I do not profess past a point to having all the goods on this particular state of affairs, but I do think that this is a case that raises more questions than it provides answers. However, it is a very, very disturbing case indeed, not just because of the terrible circumstances surrounding the death of Diane Whipple, but also because of some of the very, very strange aspects of the case itself. I mean, they were apparently keeping these dogs that were being bred as part of some sort of operation by the members of the Aryan Brotherhood. Again, a very powerful white supremacist gang within prison and within the prison system, and one that has strong reach outside of the prison and not an institution to be underestimated by any stretch of the imagination. They had adopted one of the inmates, Paul Cornfed Schneider, as their adopted son, and the DA's investigators allegedly found nude photos of Marjorie Noller in Schneider's cell. So, again, this is a very, very strange case indeed, and it gets stranger still. Another article on the case, this one by, once again, Jackson von Derbeken of the San Francisco Chronicle, appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle on Friday, March 30th of the year 2001. This article is headlined, "Killer Dogs Had Attacked Blind Woman." Again, it's by Jackson von Derbeken. And when the two lawyers appeared in court, yet another strange allegation cropped up. And this one, if you think the case is strange so far, it gets stranger still here. These are some of the documents that were presented when the couple appeared in court. The documents, including affidavits for search warrants of the couple's Pacific Heights apartment, suggest that authorities suspected sexual abuse of the dogs by the couple. Investigators theorize that possible sexual abuse of the animals may have contributed to the attack on Whipple. But officials said yesterday it appears investigators found little to support that theory. Yet according to one affidavit, Pelican Bay Prison Sergeant Joe Aiken reported finding a letter disguised as legal mail addressed to inmate Paul Schneider, unquote, that discusses sexual activity between Noel, Noller, and the dog Bane, unquote. Noel and Noller are Schneider's attorneys and adoptive parents. Aiken reported that he saw, again quoting from the affidavit, numerous photos of Noller posing nude with fighting dog drawings, unquote, among the property of Paul Cornfed Schneider and cellmate Dale Bretches. Both inmates are artists and have made the Presa Canario dogs the subject of many of their works. Aiken also reported that he, quote, discovered communications between Noel and Noller to Schneider that described sexual activities between Noller and Noel and included photos and drawings of dogs and fighting dogs, unquote, as well as a photo of a male dog's genitals. So you think the case was strange so far, it gets stranger still than this. According to this article, one of the things that was being investigated and was apparently the focal point of search warrants for the couple's apartment was a suggestion that there was sexual abuse of the dogs by the couple. Now, one sentence of the article says that investigators found little to support that theory. There was also one affidavit by a Pelican Bay guard suggesting sexual activity between Noel and Noller and the dog Bane. And this same affidavit also alleges that the same guard discovered communications between Noel and Noller to Schneider describing sexual activities between Noller and Noel and including photos and drawings of dogs and fighting dogs. Well, obviously, I'm not in a position to say how accurate these charges are. It certainly might account for some of the strange behavior that the couple has exhibited. Obviously, being indicted is not much fun. This is really, really strange stuff here, and it would indicate that there's more going on, and forgive a terrible pun, than animal husbandry here. Bear in mind that Schneider was the adoptive son of Noel and Noller, who in turn were the attorneys for Schneider and another Pelican Bay inmate, an Aryan Brotherhood member, Dale Bretches. Authorities allegedly found nude pictures of Marjorie Noller in Schneider's cell when they were searching it in connection with the case. And investigators in the DA's office had suspected sexual abuse of the dog by the attorneys. That was the allegation made in an affidavit submitted by a member of the a guard at Pelican Bay. So this is very, very strange indeed, and it gets stranger still, if that's possible to imagine. And again, I don't want to appear to be making light of this, but it's sort of an example of a passage from Nietzsche. A joke is the epigram on the death of a feeling, and one really wonders just what exactly is going on with this case. I suspect that there's much more than meets the eye, and that there's much more than just animal husbandry going on here. And again, forgive the pun, whether or not the allegations of bestiality are true, it certainly raises a lot of interesting questions. Something that raises still more interesting questions concerns the background of Robert Knoll, the attorney who, along with Marjorie Knoller, had adopted Paul Schneider as his son. Schneider, again, was one of the inmates that was allegedly breeding these dogs as part of apparently a profit-making scheme from within Pelican Bay. This is an article from the San Jose Mercury News of Saturday, February 3rd of the year 2001. The article is headlined, Owners of Killer Dog and, Owners of Killer Dog Abandoned Conventional Career Paths. It's co-authored by Dan Reed and Michael Bozley, B-O-Z-E-L-E-Y. And I think it's safe to say that's something of an understatement, that headline, Owners of Killer Dog Abandoned Conventional Career Paths. Yes, indeedy. What's interesting is what Robert Knoll allegedly did when he graduated from college, because his employment history is very, very interesting indeed. Skipping down in the article of Robert Knoll, the article says, for 5 years during college, he worked at the National Security Agency developing surveillance photos, among other work. In 1969, he became a tax lawyer for the Department of Justice in the Nixon administration. By 1981, now moved to San Diego, he joined Rogers and Wells, a private San Diego firm run in part by a Nixon associate. His wife at the time worked in early childhood education. According to this article, and by the way, I saw no subsequent mention of Knoll's alleged employment by the National Security Agency. In this article, it says that after graduating from college, Knoll worked for the NSA, which of course raises questions about the possibility of whether his employment by NSA continued after the 5 years discussed here. The NSA is super secret, and so there's no way of knowing for sure, obviously, whether or not that happened. If, for the sake of argument, he had continued his employment with NSA, it's a pretty safe bet that they would not discuss that, simply because it is arguably the most secretive of America's intelligence services. What is even more interesting, perhaps, is the fact that he became a tax lawyer for the Department of Justice in the Nixon administration, and following that, he moved to Rogers and Wells, a private San Diego firm run in part by William Rogers. Now, William Rogers had been Attorney General, I believe it was, under Eisenhower, and he was a Deputy Secretary of State under Richard Nixon. And we're going to touch back on that as well. Very, very interesting professional background here. And actually, he was Nixon's Secretary of State, not Deputy. I thought he was an Under Secretary of State. This would perhaps explain the involvement with fighting dogs and the allegations of bestiality here. Nixon himself was a son of a bitch, so that might have this might to a certain extent provide us with some explanation. But all kidding aside, note that Robert Knoll apparently worked for the NSA for 5 years, according to that article, then went to work for the Nixon Justice Department, and following that went to work for Rogers and Wells. Very, very interesting professional background indeed. By the way, in press conferences, both of these attorneys have indicated that they were political liberals and that they were fighting on behalf of the downtrodden. Robert Knoll later converted to Judaism. As we looked at in A Secret War Against the Jews, the NSA is not particularly friendly to Jews. There's a whole room in the NSA that monitors Jews in both the United States, and there's a similar room that monitors Jews on behalf of British intelligence as well. So the conversion by Robert Knoll to Judaism is interesting as well. What one can make of that, I do not know if, in fact, there is any overriding significance. I would note that the article, that was the only article that I saw in the papers that I read that mentioned Robert Knoll's work on behalf of NSA, or the 5 years that he allegedly worked for NSA. More about Robert Knoll's employment with the Nixon Justice Department, and later with Rogers and Wells, at which he handled the account of C. Arnholt Smith, which is very, very interesting, because C. Arnholt Smith was one of Richard Nixon's primary financial and political backers. This article is titled, As court takes up dog mauling, Torn Family's Tale illuminates case. It's authored by Patrick May. And skipping down in the story, we read, this is U.S. Assistant U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of California, Robert Lathrop. Lathrop was impressed. Robert Noel was barely 34 years old, fresh from his stint in Washington, not again working for the Nixon Justice Department, dispatched to clean up after the failure of U.S. National Bank. For someone trying to master the art of trial work, this was litigation heaven. Quote, "It was like something out of a grade B novel," unquote, said Lathrop, a San Diego attorney whose firm represented the bank's owner, C. Arnholt Smith. Again quoting, "Everyone wanted to depose Noel's client, the controller whose auditors had gone through the bank records. Bob's role," said Lathrop, "was to protect the United States government," unquote. Note that, Bob's role was to protect the United States government. Lathrop asked Noel in 1981 to join him at the San Diego office of Rogers and Wells, headed by William Rogers, Attorney General under Eisenhower and Nixon's Secretary of State. Noel handled big-name clients, earning good money to support Karen, the red-haired woman he'd married the day after President Kennedy was shot, and their three kids. He had a nice house near Del Mar Heights with a hot tub and a killer view of the Pacific. Bad pun in light of what subsequently happened to Diane Whipple. Another interesting detail, perhaps significant, certainly bizarre and interesting, perhaps significant in light of the work on behalf of the Nixon Justice Department and later the work on behalf of Rogers and Wells, and also the alleged work of Robert Noel for the National Security Agency, and bear in mind all of the other strange connections in the case. Speaking of Noel's son, Rob, skipping down, trouble haunted Rob. One night in 1983, a San Diego police officer pulled up at the front door with the boy. Quote, "The officer was going to write up a report the next day, which meant Rob would have entered the juvenile justice system," unquote. It never happened. In a bizarre incident, Noel said, the officer was murdered later that night. Rob Noel had temporarily escaped the system's hook. Well, again, perhaps that is merely a bizarre coincidence, but perhaps there's more to it than a bizarre coincidence. Something else that's strange, too, the attorneys represent themselves as political liberals, and they have defended not only their adoption of, but their representation of Mr. Schneider and Brecht's, saying basically they were defending them against abuse by the prison system, and that's not to doubt in any way that the prison system can be abusive, to comment on whether or not the prison system was abusive towards Messrs. Brecht's and Schneider. I'd never heard of either person before this. However, one thing that's very strange in excerpting this article, there would appear to be something of a contradiction between the couple's representation of themselves as defenders of the civil liberties of people within the prison system and another aspect of their marriage together and their mutual work as attorneys inside of the prison system. In 1989, Robert Noel and Marjorie Noler were married, the third for each. United by a mutual inspiration to help the downtrodden, they say, they started taking cases involving guards accused of wrongdoing at Pelican Bay State Prison. So if they were taking cases involving guards, it's unclear from this context. As they say they were defending prisoners who were abused by the guards, this would seem to suggest that they were taking cases involving guards, which... sort of an interesting interpretation of the downtrodden. And again, I don't know past a point what to make of that. But again, this is a very, very interesting case indeed. I would also note, whether or not it's relevant to this case, the Aryan Brotherhood has also cropped up in connection with an alleged plot to murder prison officials within Arizona. Research credit on the following goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator, who got this from the Arizona Republic of Sunday, February 4th of the year 2001. This article is by Dennis Wagner of the Arizona Republic, headlined, "Prison Officials on Aryan Death List." The article reads in part as follows. The Aryan Brotherhood prison gang has an ongoing plan, unquote, to kill Terry Stewart, state prison's director, and other correctional officers, according to a Department of Corrections intelligence report written late last year. The October 18th report, obtained by the Arizona Republic, says members of the white supremacist, quote, says members of the white supremacist organization are mounting a terror campaign in hopes that the department will overturn a policy requiring the permanent isolation of gang members. The intelligence memo was written by Todd Garris, supervisor of the Security Threat Group Unit, to Greg Lochner, administrator of the department's Special Services Bureau. Lochner said last week that investigators believe the plan is still in place and, quote, we absolutely consider it a significant threat, unquote. He added that Stewart and other corrections employees have 24-hour security. So, again, note that there are allegations that AB members in Arizona were plotting to kill prison officials who were keeping them segregated. Whether or not that has any connection with this case, I do not know. Again, the dog mauling case is very strange indeed. Robert Knoll had a background allegedly with the National Security Agency, certainly with the Nixon Justice Department, later worked for Rogers and Wells. When his son was going to be taken in on what would have been a juvenile conviction, the officer just happened to get murdered that night. Whether that was just a coincidence or whether it had something to do with the apparently very interesting connections of Robert Knoll remains to be seen. There would appear to be a contradiction between representing the rights of inmates and representing guards accused of wrongdoing at Pelican Bay. Note that they had adopted Schneider as their son, and that there are allegations, it would appear probable that from the accounts that pictures of Ms. Knoller were found nude were found in Schneider's cell, and there are also allegations of bestiality in the case. Idle thought number 212, this may be irrelevant, but if in fact there were anything to those allegations, and if perhaps some sort of weird underground operation may have been involved here, perhaps the making of bestiality pornography or films or something of that kind, I wonder whether perhaps, and this is pure rumination, I wonder whether perhaps Diane Whipple might have been menstruating or something of that kind, and that is perhaps what set the dog off, if in fact there's anything to the allegations of bestiality. Again, it's simply pure speculation. I would note, however, that there is a much less rigid dividing line between the so-called overworld and the so-called underworld. Criminal elements have long been utilized by officialdom in various capacities as enforcers, as assassins, for trafficking contraband of one kind, whether drugs or pornography. For the purposes of setting up operations, it could be used for political blackmail if you get somebody engaged in some sort of weird vice, and you can photograph it or utilize that in some concrete way. Documented in a concrete fashion, it can be used for political control. And it would be difficult to imagine a more ferocious group of people to be used as enforcers inside or outside of prison than the Aryan Brotherhood. Again, an organization whose power is not to be underestimated. And I wonder, again, what is going on with this very strange case indeed. And I would note in that context that George Bush's faith-based charity program is also going to be involving some very, very interesting programs within the prison system. The Wall Street Journal of January 26th of the year 2001 has the following article by Jim Vandehay, dateline Sugar Land, Texas, and headlined, Some Texas Prisoners Get Religion 16 Hours a Day, 7 Days a Week. A Charles Colson-led program is a model for Bush's ideas about faith-based funding. Skipping down, the program, called Interchange, is the brainchild of Charles Colson, the convicted Watergate felon who himself found religion while serving time. It attempts to rehabilitate with an intensive 2-year indoctrination in biblical teachings and proper Christian behavior. Nearly 2,000 inmates, mostly drug dealers and thieves, are enrolled in this 7-days-a-week regimen designed to set them right in the months before they return to society. Note in that connection also the following research for us by Dave White. This is from the legal publication The Champion from March of 2001. This is an article titled The 107th Congress, A Look Ahead and a Call to Action, and talking about some of Bush's plans for his faith-based initiative program. And now John DiIulio, the author of the Tough on Crime manifesto Let 'Em Rot, who falsely prophesied a rising tide of juvenile super predators, unquote, has been made the first director of the brand new White House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. This concludes For the Record program number 297, Going to the Dogs, being recorded on April 29th of 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.